many of you are people from around the world reading the daily technology newspaper on audit. So he's very up to date on what's going on in technology. He's from Montreal originally, and he's now based in Moncton. The time that we have, he was available from 9 o'clock this morning until 10 o'clock this morning. So the only way we can get him was through video conferencing, and that's the, what's great about video conferencing is you can do that and never have to come over here. So I will leave you with the mic, I guess, and you're on, Stephen. Thank you.
Well, hello everyone, and greetings from sunny but slightly snowy Moncton. My name, as you know, is Stephen Downs. I work for the National Research Council, the Institute for Information Technology, and I'm actually part of the Internet Logic Group, which is based partly here in Moncton and partly in Fredericton. And I'm pleased to be able to talk to you today. In case you're wondering, I'm videotaping this, and I'm audiotaping this, and so I've got all kinds of recording things happening here, because this is what it is to teach in the age of the internet. Teaching isn't just live presentations anymore. It used to be live presentations. You did it, you got out, there was no evidence, it was great. But now... Now there's a lot of evidence, and you know, this is moving ourselves into the internet age. I've got about an hour now between 10 and 11. He's right, it was free between 9 and 10, but I'm giving this talk between 10 and 11. There's a bit of an irony in that. Well, I say we've got about a 1 or 2 second delay on the sound, so okay, that's worth noting. It's funny because, you know, it's like speed of light from here to Charlottetown isn't very far, but you know, it's like a fraction of a second. But of course, this signal has to go by way of Vancouver or something, I guess. What I was asked to talk to you today about was why we should integrate technology, and specifically the internet, into the curriculum. I've tried to keep this a bit light, because I figure you've already been involved in presentations. I saw the technical presentation on the screen there while I was peeking in. I figure you need a little bit of a break from that. I'm going to talk for maybe half an hour, maybe a little bit less, and then we'll throw it open to questions and comments, and you can ask me pretty much anything about using technology, and especially internet technology and learning, and we'll see where the discussion goes from there. So, and I also have slides. You might be wondering how that's going to work. This is how that's going to work. So, this is modern technology at its best, folks. And for the people who are watching on the video camera, there's the title of our presentation. So it's interesting, when you're doing a presentation recording, you're always speaking to more than one audience, and it's a fascinating experience. It sometimes throws you off, right? Because you have to keep in mind the live audience, the on-camera audience, and if I had people in this room, I'd have another audience. And sometimes when I do presentations, I have a back channel, which is a screen, a separate screen in the room where people can type comments using instant messaging or a web browser or something. And so then I've got that to worry about. You can have multiple things happening all at once. But anyhow, to the presentation proper. Why integrate the internet into the curriculum? First reason. Because Czechoslovakia is no longer a country. Now, you might think, well, who cares? But the thing is, there are children, even today, learning that Czechoslovakia is a country. And they're learning that Czechoslovakia is a country because that's what their World Book Encyclopedia in their school library says. The thing about the internet is that the information is completely up to date. In fact, some of it's even from tomorrow. And so, the internet is able to bring most up-to-date information possible into the classroom. That's reason number one. I have 44 more of those to go. For a second there, I thought you might believe me. Reason number two. Because speaking in front of an audience is motivating. Now, you might be wondering, why would I be talking about speaking in front of an audience when we're talking about integrating the internet to the curriculum? But here we have an example right off the bat. This conversation that we're having here is happening online, it's happening on the internet. I'm speaking in front of an audience using the internet. And this is the sort of thing that can be done in a classroom setting as well. And in fact, there are all kinds of things that you can do in a classroom setting that puts the student in a position where they're not simply talking to their teacher, they're not simply talking to their classmates, they're talking to an audience from anywhere in the world. And the reason why this is important, whether they're making an online presentation like I'm doing here, or whether they're writing for the rest of the world in a blog or in a wiki or something like that, is that it is indeed motivating. We have people like Clarence Fisher in northern Manitoba who have tried things like blogging in the classroom, and they report that students are much more likely to put a lot of effort into their writing when they know that their writing might be read by anyone. I talked to people at a school in Quebec City, the École Saint-Joseph, and the students there went to a circus, and then they wrote about the circus in their blog, and the people from the circus responded to what they were writing in their blog. Now, that's the sort of thing that really focuses your mind when you're writing stuff for your class assignment, because the people who are reading this aren't just going to be the teacher. It's not just for marks. It's for a wider audience. Next reason. Because on the internet, anyone can be Napoleon. One of my favorite activities that I take part in is video gaming. And one of the things about video gaming is that it can put you into an immersive simulation of some historical event. For example, the Napoleonic Wars. This is interesting because it allows people to see the world from different perspectives. It allows people to understand the world from different perspectives. When you're Napoleon in a simulation, you really do understand or begin to understand why he invaded Russia, or why invading Russia was a mistake, or in the case of some students, you get to learn that he invaded Russia. The point here is that the internet, in a way that an ordinary classroom cannot, can put people into the context of situations and events. Not just historical simulations. It's a bit advanced now, but things like pilot training for airplanes, or I was in a helicopter simulator that's used by the military just down the road here in Gagetown. It was just incredible. Now, I know the internet isn't quite to that point yet, but that's the direction in which it's moving, and you can put people into charge of a corporation, or managing the budget of France, or invading Russia. All of these different things create all kinds of different immersive learning possibilities in your classroom. Next reason. Because nobody in your town speaks Kazakh. One of the things that the internet really allows in a way that a classroom cannot is authentic language training. Now, if you learned languages in class the way I learned languages in class, what you learned was language in a room full of people who had very thick English accents, because that's what they spoke. And all the practice that you could do, in my case it was French that I was learning at school, all the practice I could do, which was very minimal, was with other students. And there was no real opportunity to immerse myself in a language. Now today, of course, we have French immersion, but we don't, and we never will have Kazakh immersion. If a person wants to learn any language, Spanish, Russian, Chinese, they need to turn to the internet. And on the internet, we are able to access not just lessons and books and things like that, but podcasts and interactive audio conversations, which allow people to speak with native speakers and listen to native speakers in other languages, including Kazakh. And so this is an extension of a capacity far beyond what you can do in an ordinary classroom. Next. Because nobody else on the football team is into macrame. I grew up in a small town. And I can tell you, well, I was not on the football team, but I could have said the school. I had interests that nobody else in my town had. Now, my interest wasn't macrame, but I remember way, way back when in prehistory, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, I was listening to a woman called Claire Brooks speaking from Western Australia. She was talking about bringing the internet into the classroom and into the community. And she used the example of knitting and macrame, and she talked about these miners who lived out in the bush in Western Australia who were into knitting and macrame, and they had no one to talk to. And it's the same sort of thing in small towns today, where you might be interested in some subject and have nobody to talk to. Bringing the internet into the school and into the curriculum allows people who have particular interests to be able to talk to people around the world who have that interest. You can find other football players who have an interest in macrame. And you might think, well, how do you introduce that into the curriculum? But if you were thinking about having the students do writing, or if you're thinking about having students do a research project or anything like that, it's always more motivating and more fun for the student to pursue an interest of their own rather than something that's simply assigned to them. And if they can involve their interest in both football and macrame in their classroom assignments, then they're able to make their learning something that is their own. Now, admittedly, not many students will be interested in both football and macrame, but you'll be surprised at the sort of things that students are interested in. I'm reminded of another town in Manitoba where there was one goth. How can you be the only goth in a town? But, nonetheless, internet communications allows this person to tap into that community of like-minded people. Next reason. Because collaboration on the test is no longer cheating. Well, okay, collaboration on the test is cheating. Nonetheless, collaboration, working in teams, working with partners both locally and across the country, these are skills that are more and more in demand today. These are skills that business and industry are expecting students to be able to master as they come out of high school. They, when they're even in university, they're expected to have these collaboration and teamwork skills. How are they going to get these skills? On the one hand, they could be practicing them in class, but it's one thing to practice collaboration and teamwork with somebody that you've known all your life, and quite another to practice collaboration and teamwork with somebody that you've never met before this particular event. The internet provides communication with people that you don't know, and it provides opportunities to collaborate at a distance and to actually negotiate the process of collaboration with somebody that you don't know, but with somebody whose aims, objectives, background, and history you don't know, in order to acquire that skill. Next reason. Because you should learn something about Facebook. You might be wondering about that one. Let's face it. Students today are using social networking services like Facebook, Bebo, Orkut, MySpace, all kinds of these things. And our experience tells us, looking at these websites, that they don't always use it appropriately. If you looked at the diagram, you saw the picture, you saw the photos of Sarah, the 452 photos of Sarah that she's posted in her Facebook profile. Students need to learn to negotiate this very complex environment. Right now, they're out there on their own doing things that are not always appropriate, not always safe in environments like Facebook. And they're sharing photographs of themselves that they may really, really, really regret when they're looking for work or anything like that. They need to have these experiences in an environment where they can get advice and suggestions and even a little supervision from teachers and other school officials. The reality is, the internet is the medium for communication in the future, and if students are not aware of how appropriately and safely to use that medium, then they will not be prepared to use that medium when they leave school. Next. Because nobody uses trigonometry on the bus. You will be asked from time to time by your students or by people who are questioning curriculum design issues, why should a student do this? Why should a student do that? And of course the classic one is trigonometry. Why should anybody learn trigonometry? And let's face it, in the everyday life of the student, there is no use for trigonometry except for passing math class, right? It just doesn't come up, and probably it won't come up for a long time after they leave school. On the internet, though, they get involved in projects that can draw them deep into these sciences. I mentioned trigonometry because one of my early internet projects was to create the perfect Star Trek game. And of course, you know, one of, I don't know, a million people have tried to build the perfect Star Trek game. But as I was arms deep in designing this game, arms deep, whatever, I needed to learn how to rotate a cube because, well, I wanted enemy aliens on my screen. To rotate a cube on a screen in programming, you need to learn to use trigonometry because you need to get all the sides moving around just exactly right. That's when I learned trigonometry. It was not when I studied it in grade 12. It was not when I studied it in my first year of college. It was not when I studied it in my first year of university. It was when I actually went to create a Star Trek game online. Your students' experiences will be similar. The internet will draw them in and give them a reason to pursue the subjects we are trying so hard to convince them to show an interest in school. Next reason. Oops, don't turn off. Because teachers need somebody to talk to. I mean, let's face it, bringing the internet into the curriculum isn't just for the benefit of the students. It's for the benefits of the teachers as well. Teachers, well, I've taught, you've taught, we know. Teaching is like the loneliest job in the world because, I know, you're in a room, you've got 30, 80, whatever students with you, but there's you and there's the students. I'm sure there are those all too brief moments in the staff room, but mostly you're working on your own. You're working by yourself. Oh, sure, you might be doing team teaching or something like that once in a while, but let's face it, you know, the district just doesn't have the resources to put two or three teachers in every classroom. So how do you get communication? How do you get collaboration if you're a teacher? The only way to do it is to engage in projects with other classes and other teachers, and this is becoming a more and more popular thing. In the U.S., there's a thing called the Flat Classroom Project. The name comes from Thomas Friedman's book, The World is Flat. I don't think it's the greatest name in the world, but the idea here is that it connects teachers with each other and classes with each other around the world. And this is good not just for the students, but for the teachers, because they can see how other teachers approach and teach similar subjects, and they can see and commiserate with the same sort of challenges and problems that other teachers face. next reason. Because learning to code could save the world. Now, what I mean by that, that's a picture from a movie called War Games. And, of course, what happened in War Games is two kids write a little basic hack into the military-industrial complex and start World War III. That probably won't happen to your students. Nonetheless, there are skills that your students can learn from the Internet that they can only learn from the Internet. And to a large degree, computer programming is one of those skills. Students learn computer programming and they learn types of computer programming that are appropriate, not appropriate, that's not the right word, that apply only to Internet communications. Sure, they can learn how to program on their computer, but it's one thing to learn how to program on your computer. It's another thing to learn how to program in an environment where you have people coming in and trying out your services, where you have communications happening between computers, where you have all the different sorts of programming routines that are involved in writing CGI and other interactive code. These are skills that, you know, you don't see them so much in science or mathematics or English, but these are skills that can underlie learning in all of these disciplines as you see how the logic of programming interacts with things like English, interacts with things like mathematics. I mentioned trigonometry earlier. The students who are creating online programs also see very quickly the need for English. They also see very quickly the need for art and design and a wide range of subjects. Next reason. Because instant messaging is cheaper than SMS. This is another one of those the reality is kind of issues. Students today are, well, basically physically attached to their cell phones. They want to be in touch with their friends. They want to be in touch with their friends at all times, during the day, during the night, while they're eating, while they're sleeping, while they're taking a math class. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with students communicating with each other. But by using the Internet, you can have them use tools to communicate that are on their desktop, that are integrated with the learning materials that they should be learning. They can be using instant messaging to help each other with their math assignments rather than using SMS on their cell phones in order to talk about whatever it is they talk about on their cell phones. Next reason. Because not everybody can tour Mongolia. One of the things that the Internet gives us, and I'm thinking especially of software applications like Google Maps and Google Earth, is the ability to get up close to and see very clearly in an almost personal manner things that they would never get to see from around the world. For example, this view of the mountains of Mongolia. And indeed, you can learn all about Mongolia, not just from Google Earth, but from Wikipedia and a wide variety of other resources online. Students aren't going to be able to see things like Mongolia for themselves in the classroom without being able to access the Internet and without being able to use these resources. And I think it probably goes without saying that it's good for students to see these things. It's good for them to be able to get a wide perspective on things. I was going to say for this example earlier on, not everybody can experience the weather in Bali. What I wanted to draw out with that, I didn't use that because I like Mongolia better, but what I wanted to draw out using that example is that you can tie direct knowledge of locations like Bali with things like events, like the conference that's currently taking place in Bali. You can use that information to fill out, to round out things. So you have a discussion of the conference in Bali, and you have students looking at maps of Bali, seeing pictures of Bali, actually beginning to understand and to empathize with what it feels like to be one of the delegates in Bali. And that gives them a different perspective. It makes the learning not just antiseptic and dry, but something that they can feel, something that they can experience. Next week, and this is kind of almost a restatement of an earlier one, but from a much more practical perspective, because the school library only has 12 books from this century. Okay. They have more. But let's be frank. They don't have a lot more. Books are expensive. Books are getting more and more expensive every day. And as things like pulp and paper become more expensive, and as the price of fuel rises, the price of books is only going in one direction. Really, if we want to get textual, written, curricular material into the hands of students and do it at a price we can afford, digital content is the only way to go. I mean, it's a no-brainer. We can put an entire encyclopedia, we can put all of the history, all of the world's great books in history into the hands of students for the price of two or three biology textbooks. Because of this, it seems reasonable and rational to take the approach of using digital text and digital audio and digital video rather than attempting to use the analog medium, which is expensive, hard to use, hard to carry, and hard to share. Next reason. Because the school is the only place that doesn't use the internet. Let's face it, the internet is everywhere. I didn't want a picture of a computer on this slide. What I wanted was a picture of one of the buses that drives through Moncton. We have a bus company called Kodiak Transit here in the city. It's just city buses, but on the side of every city bus is the big Wi-Fi logo. We have wireless internet on our city buses. Now, if we can have wireless internet on our city buses, we should have and use the internet in the schools. Let's face it. This world now is an internet world. Everything we do, everything we touch is influenced by the internet. The news broadcasts that we watch on TV have YouTube videos in them. The financial analysis that we see is based on a market-driven game that is being run on the internet. Everything we do is thoroughly infused by the internet. And this needs to become true of school as well, not simply because the technology is driving us, but because it's our responsibility to ensure that students are prepared and able to use everything that they will use in the world as a whole. And the world as a whole today is an internet world, and therefore our schools should be internet schools. So that's basically my talk, my presentation. I hope I've given you some pretty compelling reasons why the internet should be very much a part of the curriculum in our classrooms today. And if you have any comments, questions, we can go in whatever direction you would like, and we'll take it from there. So I can't see a moderator anywhere, but oh, there he is. And I'm just going to...
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. House, for the presentation. I'm just going to open up the floor. If anybody has any questions, we have lots of questions. We have probably 15 minutes, maybe. Does that sound good? I guess that sounds good. All right.
Oh, sounds good to me.
Okay. Okay, we have a microphone up front that you'll have to speak loudly, or I can just pass this microphone around and we'll go from there.
Yeah, just pass it around, I think.
Hi, I really enjoyed the presentation. Looked at my slide. My son is also a black guru. I just have a question. It isn't directly related to the internet and classroom per se, but you mentioned a lot of the web-based games and a lot of the particular intermediate and high school kids are very much involved in those. Do you find that it sort of takes over, you know, sort of replaces reality. Like they'd rather be there than interacting directly with their peers in school.
Short answer is yes. Of course, the short answer, they'd rather be doing almost anything than that. So, the games are, I don't want to say addictive, but they're very engaging. They do draw you in, and they're very much designed to draw you in, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. With anything, there's the possibility of excess, and you know, there are stories of people who spend 3 days without sleep on a video game. This is probably a bad thing, but I think there's nothing wrong with somebody that is going to keep and hold somebody's attention like that for a long period of time. I mean, after all, this is exactly what we're trying to do in school, it's just we're not as successful. I'm getting some hissing or feedback there of some sort. Now that's better. Don't know what that was. And the way I approach this is, how can we use what we know about games to hold the attention of students in that way for that length, for that period of time? Because the students, when they're participating in these games, haven't simply vanished from society. They are still interacting with people. Most of these games involve other people, other real people, very often people in their own class. It's sort of funny. You see two people in class busy typing on the screen. They're actually communicating with each other. They're 5 feet apart, but they're doing it through the computer screen. There's nothing wrong with that. I know it's kind of weird from our perspective, but it's actually easier to communicate that way in some cases. So we should be looking at, how do we get learning into these games? How do we make learning as interesting and addictive as these games? How can we give them alternatives that are attractive enough to distract them from just these games? Maybe that hissing is just a way of telling me I've been going on too long, because when I get going, that's how it starts. Does that address...
I'll pass it over to Renee.
Do you feel like Phil Donahue?
Jerry Springer.
Oh, Jerry Springer, yeah. I should get with the century.
Just a short question. You're walking into a school in 20 years from now. What would you like to see? What does it look like?
What would I like to see? Not classrooms. We have the technology to deliver instruction, and there are many better ways of delivering instruction than having a teacher stand in front of the room to do it. So what we should expect when we walk into a school is the focus of the school should be to provide community support, community facilities, not just for children, but for anybody in the community who wants to learn. It'll be a building with meeting spaces. It'll be a building that contains equipment that people can't afford on their own, like high-end simulations or immersive gaming rooms, things like that. It'll be a building that supports communication, high-speed video conferences with other places around the world. The people working in that building won't be teachers and they won't be examiners. Teachers and examiners could be anywhere. They'll probably work from their own home anyways. The people who work in that building will be explicitly and expressly on the side of students. They'll be advocates for students. They will be there to help the students negotiate the various types of things that they need to negotiate in the course of their education. They need to negotiate all the different schools that they're attending online through the interactive facilities available in this building to talk to the different professors and experts that they'll meet online. So these facilitators will be there to give coaching, support, mentoring, and personal skills to the students, and not to teach them algebra and history. So the School of the Future isn't a school. It's a community facilitation center, a meeting center, a place where people go to use equipment, to do activities, to play games with each other, and to communicate with the rest of the world.
Okay, just one other question. How young do you think we should be starting and teaching children how to interact with a computer, basically having hands-on experiences, or how to set up and just sort of like to start
it? It really depends on how you define computer. There are children's games, interactive, bright colored children's games that can be used by toddlers, by very young infants, and I don't see anything wrong with that. We have mobiles that hang down into their cribs, and you've seen them, right? They say, oh, look at all the colorful things. I don't know how to computerize that, but if you could, that would be the sort of thing that would be there, that would be possible. Putting simple tools into the hands of very young children, at the age we gave them blocks, we can be giving them internet blocks that remembers the letters that they've seen and keeps track so that the blocks ensure that they're getting a good distribution of letters and numbers or whatever. And when it looks like the kid has remembered the letters and numbers, then it maybe moves to something a little more complicated. Any place where there's learning in the life of an infant or a child is a place where computer technology can come into play. It's really important, crucial, to keep in mind that in the future, computing won't just be in computers. Computing will be in everything. It almost is in everything, even now. I got a computer and my camera. I got a computer and my tape recorder, which isn't recording on tape anymore because it's a computer. Computer in the car. Computer in the toaster, computer in the fridge. There will be computers in everything that kids use. And so the question isn't how early. The question is what kind of computers, what kind of data recording is appropriate, what kind of adaptive system is best for an infant of 6 months as compared to an infant of 1 year.
Okay.
Question I have is looking at when we're developing technology, are we also, as we move forward, look at down about how human characteristics and how that balances in the development of technology? Because humans interacting with technology, you want to have human qualities to be developed and to move forward, not that there's not technology for technology today.
The phrase human characteristics is a bit vague, but I kind of get what you're at or what you're after. To put it on a certain level, communicating person to person is different from communicating online. There's an example of what you mean. I see you nodding there, so, and that's right. I have never thought that involving the internet in education means putting kids in front of computers for the entire day. And I don't think that people who are working in this field envision it that way. There's the One Laptop per Child project, you may have heard of it, that's designed to put little laptops into the hands of kids. And these are good laptops. They're rugged. You can drop them. They don't break. They communicate with each other. They create a wireless mesh. But the idea here is that kids aren't supposed to sit there and type onto these little laptops and spend all day doing that. Kids are supposed to take these laptops with them and go out and do things and use and use these laptops to support their learning, roll their oats and doing things. And this is the picture of using the internet and learning that we should be thinking of. Taking these rugged little laptops or personal digital assistants or something like that out into the woods and learning about forestry. As a group with each other, communicating, able to access all kinds of knowledge and information about trees and forests while they're out there in the forest. Or a group of them taking their rugged little laptops and going to the courtroom downtown and watching the trials for a day. And they're able to communicate on their computers. They're able to learn about the law. They're maybe even able to access the case histories of the trials that they're watching to learn about court terms and all of that. The idea here is that the computer becomes their tool to get information, to communicate with each other, and so on, but it doesn't become their whole life. It enhances, it extends their capacities, but it doesn't replace their entire capacity. So they're up there, they're doing things in the world, only they're doing them better and in a more informed way with the computer to support that.
I teach teenagers, and I find that all of them have their favorite sites. They like to check their Hotmail, listen to their music. But when we try to do internet research, they're completely out of the box. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that and some tips for using internet for research.
Yeah. I would say that the first thing is to not just simply throw them into it. You know, they don't have good examples. They don't have good models at the moment of internet research. The media, if anything, is a bad example for them. So they need models. They need examples. They need to see internet research happening before they're actually asked to do it. What I tell teachers to do is, first and foremost, to use the internet themselves. To use the internet to support and create a background for their own classes. For them to actually demonstrate their use of the internet to research and support and supplement learning materials. When the student sees the teacher actually looking at resources, actually assessing those resources aloud, asking questions aloud about those resources. If a teacher, for example, is looking at different websites in a class, they should be asking, well, do I believe this? Oh, I don't know if I believe this. And, you know, I'm talking about what they're saying. Being interactive with this resource in front of the class. That gives the students a model of the attitude that they need to take before using the internet resources to do research for themselves. And it's having this model that gives them the tools that they need in order to use the internet appropriately to do research.
Any more questions, Mr. Ryan? Mr. Downs?
Yes.
Let's imagine for a moment that I'm an average teacher.
Correct.
I grew up in the analog age. All this digital stuff sounds interesting. That sounds out there as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
What would you have me do when I go back after my Christmas break? What do I need to be thinking about if I want to take a few steps down this road? Talk to me as the average teacher.
Have you got a computer?
Yes.
At home or at work?
Not in both places.
Okay. The main thing I want you to do is to read. So I would probably suggest some websites to you that would be possibly of interest to you. Do you use email?
I do.
Okay. Are you already taking part in discussion lists, or is this something new to you? Okay. So I would probably hook you up with one or two discussion lists, nothing major, but just sort of something to get you interested in turning on the computer in the morning to see what people have written overnight. I'd hook you up to one or two blogs or other things, I'd probably hook you up to my own newsletter because, well, it's a resource I know and I'm familiar with. But if you're interested in different things, if you're interested in astronomy, I might hook you up with an astronomy blog. If you're interested in online medicine, I might hook you up. I'd try to find out what your interests were and hook you up with some, not an overwhelming amount of information, but a regular supply of information. Because what I'm going to try to get you to see is that using the internet isn't like reading a book or anything like that. It's rather you get some of what you want every day. It's a regular, constant kind of background thing. And it's something that you sort of get into the habit of using. And I don't want to change your life. I just want you to do things like check your email every day. And to do that, I'll make sure there's something interesting in your email. Or to check an RSS reader every day. And to do that, I'll make sure that there's something interesting in your RSS reader. Just to catch your interest. And as you become more used to using the internet, my focus will be more and more on how you are learning and how you are focusing and following your own interests using your internet connection. I'm not even at all interested at this point about you using the internet to teach. Maybe in a few years when you're more comfortable with it. There's no need to rush it, you know. The idea here is for you to see how your own life benefits from the internet. And as you get more used to having this information, the resources, Googling people to find out where they come from, all of these sorts of things, that's when you will be in a better position to use the internet in your class, and you'll actually find yourself doing it naturally, and I won't need to teach you how to do it.
Okay, and your time is pretty much up. Anybody else have any questions? Nothing else. Okay, do you have anything else that you want to add to
that? Well, I hope you found the session useful. Maybe a little bit humorous. I did try. And you can access my own website, including the newsletter that I've mentioned, at my website at downs.ca. And if you want to give me the address later on, you can do that. And if you have any questions, comments, or anything else related to this topic in the future, I'd be more than happy to talk about this and go into as much detail in any of these topics as you would possibly like. So thank you very much for taking the time and enjoyed the conversation.
Hey, we're just going to have a quick break for a few minutes, and then we're back with
Bye, everyone.